Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Happy to have you along today as we take a look at your computer with Peter Green of Infostar.com. Great to have him coming by today, and great to have you listening in. Well, we're going to zero in a little bit on switching from a Mac to a PC or vice versa, and that's something that I wanted to cover. We get lots of questions about it, and thought it'd be worth spending a little time on. And of course, we're also going to be looking at answering your questions as well as you join in. And you can do that by calling 1-800-642-1234, email at talk@wpr.org, or go to my Facebook page. You can post there at the Larry Mueller Show. And Pete, welcome.
Always great to be back, Larry.
Yeah, nice to have you back. There's the Apple versus the PC debate, and sometimes people
I'm playing middle ground on this.
Yeah,
this
sometimes
is for,
yeah, sometimes people are going one way,
going the other.
Sometimes they're going the other way. What about the sort of the differences between the two platforms in terms of users' experience and so forth?
Well, it's more of you know, if you're using one platform or the other, what are your options for going, you know, to the other,
side?
To the other side. And what I discovered was using Google Gmail allows you the ability. So if you're using like Windows XP, Outlook Express, or Outlook, or if you're on the Mac side, the ability to import your if you want to call them archived messages, your so, you know, people keep email messages, and I have a large number of folders that, you know, to try to organize my email. There are some limitations, but basically you can at least import your messages into the Google Gmail system. One of the limitations is the establishment of how many folders you can have up there. The other limitation is how much you can actually put up there. But if you follow the procedure to do it, and it's posted online, there are people who have written about it, you can actually import and have access to your email messages online that would have been on your desktop system, whatever you were using, along with you know, word processing documents. You can use Google Docs, and you can import those documents, so they're essentially available to you online. So then it's a matter of, what do you use to access that? So you use a PC or to use your Mac, and you can always move it back to your desktop. It's just a matter of deciding what you want to use to access it. But you have Google Gmail and Docs available to you to access your data files. Now, as far as the other things go, video, music, pictures, that's just a matter of finding the player or the editing tool that you use to work with those different you know, files, file types.
Yeah, Ed, for example, had a Facebook question from him having to do with photos, and he wonders what's better, Mac or PC, for editing photos for a serious amateur. My files are about 25 megabytes each in raw format, basic editing and file management.
I would lean towards using a Mac for that.
Yeah.
I mean, there are tools available for both platforms, but Windows still has what I call memory leaks and issues with dealing with large files, and Mac just seems much better behaved and less issues as related to working with those kind of files.
So,
and that's why it's popular in the you know, in the newsrooms, in the video editing world, in the special effects.
In the Macs are.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Maggie and Iola said that a couple of months back, you identified a website to measure the rate at which computers upload and download to and from the
internet. Yes. It's called speedtest.net that measures, it tests the internet access speed, and it does upload and download speeds. It shows you the rate.
Okay, and what is it again?
It's speedtest.net.
Speedtest.net. Okay.
Yeah, and it's popular also on, well, it should be popular on your smartphone, whether it's an iPhone or if you're using an iPad or a tablet. and you're hooked up by Wi-Fi, it gives you an indication. You can run the app, and it gives you an indication of your connectivity speed. So you can see how slow or how fast you're going, which is nice to know.
Yeah, well, sure.
I mean, you're waiting for a web page to load, and you go, well, how fast am I accessing the internet, my Wi-Fi? At least it tells you. Otherwise, you have no idea.
Callers online at 1-800-642-1234. That's the number for you to call if you want to join in. Email at talk@WPR.org. So in terms of, you know, switching from Mac to PC, it's...
Well, the other underlying issues are, you know, what do you use your computer for?
Yeah.
You know, what do you use? Are you using it for email and web browsing? The Mac, you've got Safari, which is the popular web browser. You can upload, you know, there's Chrome and Firefox. Going on the PC side, you can get Safari for the PC. You know, so, you know, are you using it for email, using it for web browsing, using it for word processing, spreadsheets. If you do accounting systems, you know, the popular ones, QuickBooks and things like that. Depends on what you're using it for. You have to find those applications, you know, and make sure that whatever other things you're using your computer for work, whether you switch one way or the other. Some programs are cross-platform, and it doesn't matter whether or not you use a Mac or a PC to access the data files. You just need the correct application to run the program, and then you can, people can be using both systems and access the data files. So it really boils down to what are you using it for, and then the underlying factor is the cost, you know, of one piece of hardware versus the other piece of hardware. I've heard a lot of feedback from a wide variety of friends and people that I've talked to as far as, you know, the world is going towards tablets. Tablets make it very easy, you know, like an iPad, a Nook, and so forth. You know, there are lots of them out there, but it makes it very easy to do, almost, you know, it's like you're picking up a book or picking up a piece of paper, but you can change it so quickly, and it's multitasking because you can do email, you can do online stuff, not just web browsing, but there might be other applications you're using, and then you could just put it down and it falls asleep, and then you pick it up, and or you could be sneaking watching TV or a movie or a game or whatever, and then still using the tablet, and you have access to, you know, keyboard because you can type on the screen. So a lot of people are finding that they're not using their desktop laptops as much.
And that's probably, I mean, at least at home, it turns out, you know, I've got my sort of desktop sitting there and my laptop sitting there, but I've got my
iMac. So which one do you use more often?
I pick up my iMac and I'm using that a lot. So I'm not using the desktop.
So you use an iPad.
Yeah, iPad.
You find yourself migrating to using the tablet.
Yeah, the tablets. Yeah. Did I say iMac? I meant iPad. Yeah.
It's close enough, Larry. We kind of get the picture.
Oh, my God. Yeah, well, I've got two of those, actually.
I knew what you meant.
Oh, man. Emily, I use it all the time. And it's really, it's so handy.
Yeah, That's what it is.
That's the point.
And when you're done with it, you just put it down.
Yeah, it's great. So, Emily in Milwaukee, what is on your mind?
Hi, I'm actually driving at the moment, and I was hoping I could pull over, so I hope that the background noise isn't too loud for you guys.
We're good.
Okay, good. I use a Mac. I previously was a PC user, but got sick of the short battery life on my laptop, so switched to a Mac, and in terms of battery life, I've been really happy. And one of the things that really helped me during the transition was partitioning my hard drive so that I could still buy the Windows operating system and access it on my MacBook. And I also bought Microsoft Word for Windows and could use it so that it was compatible with all other PC users. And I'm just wondering if there are any negative, did I do anything to my hard drive by doing that partition?
No, it sounds like you had it well planned. Or whoever directed you to do that, that's a great option.
Okay. All right. Well, good. Then I should be worry-free. It seemed to work out really well for me, so maybe that's something other people thinking about doing a transition might want to look into.
Yeah, the Mac system, the operating system, gives you the ability to run what's called Boot Camp, and then there's another product called Parallels for the Mac, which is gives you the ability to install an alternative operating system, typically Windows, and you can pick your flavor of Windows, but you still need to own the license for the Windows in order to install it that way. And it gives you the ability to, with the difference between the two is the Parallels allows you to be running both OSs at the same time. Versus Boot Camp, you actually have to decide which way do you want to boot up. Do you want to boot up as a Mac or do you want to boot up as a PC?
And that's right. I have the Boot Camp where you just, when you turn on your computer, you press in the option key and it lets you select one or the other.
Right. What's neat about the Parallels is you can, you're doing both things at the same time. So if you want to use it as a Mac, you can use it as a Mac. And if you need to look something at in your Windows system, you can just switch right over to it.
That would be really convenient.
Yeah, and it works really well. It's been available for years, and people that, if you need it, you need it.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Thanks for taking my call.
Yep. Yeah, thanks a lot for calling, Emily. Yep. Appreciate it very much.
Yeah, and Boot Camp is available with, again, it's available with the operating system from Apple, but the two issues are, one, you need the license for the other operating system that you decide to put on the Mac, and you have to decide which way you're booting up.
Yeah. Somewhat relating here, Doug, lifelong Mac user since he was 5 in 1987, is about to switch to Windows 7. However, he needs to continue using GarageBand and Apple Logic for music production. Is it possible to virtualize an instance of Mac OS X 10.7 within Windows 7 in order to use these applications? If so, would it run smoothly?
There are some people out there that they call them Hackintoshes or something, where you hack a Windows machine to get it to run Apple. You know, so there are some laptops out there that you can actually
Hackintosh.
Yes, you could probably. I'm sure you can Google it. But if there's a way out there to do that, I would just kind of hone in on my searches, and read the results and see what path it leads you down to be able to do that. I have not personally tried to do that, but I'm sure there's got to be a way out there. Now, the one of the things to understand and realize is that I'm trying to think of how many years it's been. It's got to be at least 5 years, maybe six, that Apple made the commitment to the Intel platform. So the ability to do that is not far-fetched. In other words, the Intel platform, the CPU, the engine that drives both operating systems is by the same CPU manufacturer.
Mm-hmm.
So the coding, the funky things that get into play are really having the right other pieces of hardware, the other video cards, and being able to talk to the devices that you need to talk to when you're trying to do cross-platform things. And that's where the research comes into play. So that's why when I mentioned the Hackintosh and trying to get a Windows laptop to act like an Apple system, it's because you can't do it to all of them.
Yeah.
There are limitations to the other hardware that can be talked to by the alternative operating system. And there are tricks. And people have gone out of their way to research and make them work, but they didn't do it across the board for everything that's out there. So that's why you have to put the time in to research it and see how you can accomplish it.
Peter Green of Infostar.com, our guest. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. If you have a computer question, join us at the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page, or you can email us at talk@WPR.org or phone at 800-642-1234. Mark in Waukesha up next. Hi, Mark.
Good morning, gentlemen, and thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I've recently lost audio on my PC. The computer can't seem to find my audio card or recognize it or update it. And I don't know what audio card I have or how to find it. And as I've researched this, I've seen a lot of cautions about updating audio cards or not getting the right match if you're trying to update it from the web. Can you help me with this?
What operating system are you using?
XP.
Okay. One way to try to fix it is Microsoft's got a website called Fixit. If you Google search it, just type in F-I-X-I-T, and they will ask you a series of questions to try and download and interact with your system to see if they can help diagnose the problem. Another alternative approach is to, if you know what video or an audio card is in your system, or if you don't, you can download a tool called Belarc Advisor, B-E-L-A-R-C, Advisor, and it will analyze your system and tell you what you have for your audio card and what you're trying to, you know, what version it is and so forth. And then go to the manufacturer's website and look and see if you can find an updated version of it. Another alternative is how long has the problem been going on?
About 3 weeks.
3 weeks.
I likely deleted whatever, as I was trying to clean up files, probably deleted the file that had that.
Okay. There might be an outside chance that
if you restore it?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, is to go to System Tools and System Restore and see if you can go back in your calendar of restore points prior to the date of when you think this might have happened. And it won't affect doing a system restore, if that is an option to you, won't affect any of your data files. So anything that you've put on since then, that's all fine. It will only affect any programs that you've changed or updated during that time. Mm. You would have to redo those.
Sure.
So that's another option. So you really have, you know, you've got
quite a few.
Yeah.
Sure. All right. I like your first two particularly. So thank you very much, Peter.
Yeah, the MS Fixit, it will ask you some questions as related to your system, your operating system, and the problem that you're having, and it will ask you to download a file and then try to interact with your system to determine what's missing. There are some other elaborate options, but I think those are the three to try. Another one I'll put out there, it's a little bit more...
Are you sure you want to put this out?
No, I'll put it out there. It's sometimes what you have to do is sometimes a file gets corrupted and needs to be identified and replaced, and there is an option called Windows Repair, and I would probably just direct you to research it online, where you actually there's a tool that allows you to run a check and verification of all the files for the Windows operating system, and then the other one is the Windows Repair in going through. Other than identifying it, it will actually go through and attempt to right itself.
That's the one that I have tried that hasn't been able to identify the audio card or bring in the update. Yeah,
then that tells me that it's not a Windows operating system problem, but more of the driver issue, you know, that it's...
All right. Well, and I'm glad to hear you recommend the Belarc Advisor, because, you know, you never know...
The Belarc Advisor will tell you what you have, and then you have to go and find the missing piece. But since you know what you're looking, you know, you kind of know what you're looking for. So you got to find the manufacturer's website, and then the other one is the MS Fixit, which might help in identifying it as well.
Mm-hmm.
Very good.
All right.
Thanks, man.
Yep. Thanks a lot for calling. And we have a Facebook question from Laura. Recently inherited an older MacBook and iPad 1. Enjoying the MacBook, we have the Windows installed for Mac to run my Windows-based programs, but it runs really slow. How do you get it to run faster? If this helps, I have Mac OS 10, version 10.7.3 processor, 20 gigahertz core, 2 Duo memory, 2 gigabytes. I use it for digital scrapbooking, Photoshop, and browsing.
The only thing I can think of is if it's acting or running real slow, is just doing some of the maintenance work on it like you would with a normal Windows system. You know, it's going to have a recycle bin. It's going to have temporary files that need to be cleaned up. If the drive space isn't maintained, it will choke itself and slow down. So, you know, resizing the recycle bin, even though it's essentially a virtual drive, it still is allocating space in that. So resizing the recycle bin down to, you know, probably 1%. And again, it depends on the operating system. If you happen, I don't know, was it mentioned which version of Windows?
Let's see. I'm just checking back here. I'm not seeing it.
Well, if it's Windows XP, you could size
Windows
it down.
Install for Mac.
Yeah, you could size it down to 1%. With Windows 7, you can actually customize the size. So I usually put in like 250 meg because if you're gonna delete something that's more than 250 meg, it's gonna ask you. You know, do you really want to delete this because we can't save it? And to delete 250 meg to me is a pretty large file.
Yeah,
you need to know. You know what's going on, because you know resize the recycle bin, do the file maintenance, clear any temporary files out. You could use disk C cleaner on it, you know, see if that helps too.
On to Patricia in Milwaukee. Hi, Patricia.
Hi. I have to make this quick because I have to hang up my phone, but I'll listen to you tonight for my answers. I don't get to. I unwisely put all my passwords on a folder in my email program, and then I realized if I have to take my computer into a shop to be serviced or repaired, it's going to be on there, and everybody could get all my passwords. And so I don't know. I thought, okay, I could just trash them. You know, just empty the trash. But then I read about how people have things on email and they get rid of them, they think, and then they can be retrieved, and they're never really gone. So can you tell me how I could get rid of these, this order of my passwords and safely so that it cannot be retrieved by anybody?
Well, in your email system, if you delete the folder and then go into the delete folder and delete that and then exit out of your... the program, the email program, though, huh? It'll be gone.
Nobody can sneak around and...
Nope, it'll be
okay.
Gone.
That's so helpful. Thank you very much.
All right, yep. Thanks a lot for calling.
Fortunately or unfortunately, depends on how you look at this.
Yeah.
What happens with the email system is it's occupying space on your drive, and it opens itself up for what you're doing at that time and moment. And... when you delete a folder or delete files, it puts those deleted almost like in the recycle bin of the email operating system. So if you go and delete it out of your delete folder and then get out of the email program, it's almost, it's like reshuffling the card deck.
Yep.
So,
you're safe.
Yeah, there are programs out there. If you've got a lot of, you know, passwords, what I'm hearing is, you know, password management. There are programs out there help you manage them, or, you know what, having one of those little notebooks and writing them down for future reference and putting it in a safe place. is not a bad thing.
Yeah.
Some people put them in their phone, and your phone is pass locked.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you really use weird passwords and they're difficult for you to remember, good luck.
Oh, man. Dave Inácio, it is your turn. Hi, Dave.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Thanks for the program. I'm looking at purchasing a new computer. I have a couple old ones that are kind of, well, they're beyond what I want to use. And I'm wondering about going to the Mac system or the PC, and I do some searching internet. I kind of like Facebook. I'm thinking of organizing maybe some ancestry files and typing some family history, maybe scanning some photos in. Any ideas about what would work, or either or?
Either one works.
Well, I can tell you I've worked with a wide variety of systems, laptops, desktops, Mac Minis, tablets, Mac Pros, MacBook Pros, and so forth. One is that, you know, how much are you looking at investing? Because the price point goes all the way from Windows laptops that you can buy for like $300 to $400 all the way to spending several thousands of dollars. So there's a wide range in terms of what you can invest in. But if you're looking at, you know, online world experience, you know, accessing Facebook, browsing, maybe doing some things with pictures or videos. There's a lot of desktops, Windows desktops, and there's Mac systems that work well. And as far as, you know, monitor size, you know, boy, sky's the limit, because they all have all these flat screens have PC interfaces on them. So people use these giant screens for playing their video games, not just for watching TVs.
I wouldn't have any of that, I don't think.
Okay. The Mac Mini, I believe it starts at $599. It doesn't come, the new version does not come with a DVD drive. You actually have to buy that separate. But I think that's got a 500 gig hard drive and a couple of gigs of memory. They work fine. There are desktops out there that probably won't be quite as fast, but might be less less of an investment.
Yes.
Then you just have to add a monitor to it. What you have on your PC and what you might have to convert over to the Mac. If you've got email, again, I mentioned, you know, Google Gmail for importing email messages into that, so you can still look at your old stuff. You can import your contacts into it. And what happens with the Google Gmail system is you actually have access to that. It's online. It's not on your desktop anymore. So you can access it when you travel, which is kind of nice, because then you don't have a PC with you, but you still need access to your email. You're basically accessing it via the cloud through Google system.
Okay, I understand.
All right.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. Well, thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling.
Enjoy the journey. There's a lot of options out there.
Yeah, there sure are. We have Chris emailed us wondering, he uses Ubuntu?
Yep.
And when comparing Windows, Mac, and Linux, which would you consider the most stable?
Most stable. I don't have a lot of computer time on Ubuntu, but I don't really have, it would be more of a hobbyist use, because from a business standpoint, the stuff that I'm using, I need to be working with a Mac and a PC. You know, they all have issues. I would say the least stable is probably Windows. Windows just has, you know, constant, you know, it's almost like a problem child that Windows has to keep, you know, keep after is the best way to put it. Or they feel they have to in order to protect it, you know. But, you know, Apple does have some issues and has some quirks. I'm not fully comfortable with their iTunes setup and how it interacts and interfaces with their devices and the lack of user control to do certain things. I do not like that. But if you want to use the Mac system, you have to allow for some of that stuff. You know, again, with alternative operating systems, Ubuntu, and there are other Linux platforms and Unix platforms out there, is support in terms of user support, your peers, what are you using it for? If you're just using it for getting online and doing email and maybe some word processing, and if the games that you play are available for it, then that's great. If there are business applications you use it for, you know, that's great. There are lower costs, but it's more a lot of self-serving in terms of trying to find solutions and getting things, you know, to work the way you need them to. The support is not out there the way the other OSs are. So you got to weigh all those things. And some people enjoy that, and others, you know, that's not the path they want to go. Yeah. And that's why we all have choices.
Bob in Jackson, Wisconsin. Hello.
Hi, good afternoon.
Hi.
Or good morning. So I heard you gentlemen talking about, I believe something like it's called a notepad or what have you. And Larry, you were saying that you use it around your house and can just set it down. And I'm envisioning being in the great room, watching television and wanting to, let's say, Google up an answer to something that we just saw on the History Channel or what have you.
Yep.
And so
I've done that with my iPad.
That's exactly the recommendation I was looking for. And so we're not looking really to have, you know, another workhorse in the house. This is going to be for, you know, I'm sure my wife's going to jump on her Facebook account, you know, and those kinds of things. Yeah. Some Googling around, some email, maybe a bit of online game playing or what have you.
Right.
Or stuff that you would have on your computer that you would want to just play with.
Do all that.
Yep.
Do all that.
Yeah.
So what kind of name should I be looking for? I mean, I know very little about this stuff.
Well, to me, there are two issues. One is, if do you have internet access, and what kind of internet access?
We've been on the internet a long time.
Okay, so do you have broadband?
Right now, we have the Charter bundle.
Okay, so do you have Wi-Fi in your house?
No.
Okay, you would need to hook up what's called a Wi-Fi router.
Mm-hmm.
That would allow you to propagate a wireless internet signal in your house that you would access.
Okay.
And what happens with a tablet, in this case we're talking about the Apple iPad, is that you would basically log in with that iPad one time, and then it would remember that connection over and over again. So anytime you picked it up and turned it on, it would see that connection, the wireless Wi-Fi connection, and allow you to access the internet.
Is this, Peter, what they call, and I've heard, a wireless router in your house?
Yes.
And then people, other family members and whomever, if you give them your Wi-Fi code,
right,
then mm-hmm. they can walk in and they can jump into your system wirelessly?
Correct. Yep.
You know, I've been paying attention, and I almost know you fellow. Well, I do.
Well,
know
you that. Sound like you know what you're talking about.
Well, that's because I listen to you guys a lot of times. I've probably heard Peter on the radio 11 times a year for the last 3 years, or however long.
Well, then you've learned a lot, right?
Well, yes, actually, a lot of what I know about this sort of stuff, being a semi-literate old guy with this computer stuff. I've learned a lot from your program, so thanks.
So now,
as far as, you know, it's something I don't want to spend, you know, $1 million. I want to get something that's nice and would work and has a fair screen. Mm-hmm. So I heard you mention iPad.
Well, that's the most popular one, and I believe
it's about
the starting
$500.
Yeah, I believe the starting price on a 16 gig Wi-Fi enabled iPad is $499, and that's it. Most people are good with 16. The higher one, I think it's still 64 is the high end.
Yeah,
I haven't looked at the new specs, but they improved the screen resolution. I think they made it a little thinner. The other thing is the other model is the one that comes with internet, but you have to pay a monthly fee for that, and that's not the one that you want, and it's also more expensive. But what you want to do is make sure when you get a Wi-Fi router, you don't want to go skimp on that, because what happens is if you go to the low end of a Wi-Fi router, you're cheating yourself on the accessibility of your Wi-Fi signal. So you want at least something that's rated N. There's B, G, and N, and you want something that's going to put out a strong signal. So you might want to research, you know, use Google and research best, you know, Wi-Fi N-rated wireless routers. See what there's D-Link, Linksys, Vizio puts out a good one. There's some that are dual band. I know I have a Vizio one that I think they only even make one that is dual band at the same time, and I think it's about $60 or $70. And it works really well. It's very easy to set up.
You want to get something that's going to be. If you get a piece of junk, you'll
get frustrated.
You will get very frustrated.
Yeah.
Believe me.
And I've got
from experience.
I've got a few people using the Vizio one, V-I-Z-I-O, and it's used both in business environments and at home, and it simultaneously does both bands, which is not usual. And to me, when I bought it, I think at least a year ago was the last time, and it was like $60 or $70. To me, that's still pretty inexpensive to be able to do that.
Absolutely.
So, Peter, would you actually be able to Wi-Fi a Vizio television set?
Yes.
Oh, man, this is sweet. We just came into the 21st century and bought a nice 42-inch flat screen.
Yeah, as long as the screen that you have has that feature as part of it, you would be able to set it up to do that.
Okay.
Yep.
Well,
and that's why Vizio made that product. And it was interesting. I walked into one of the stores that sold it, and they would put all their networking stuff in one area, and then the Vizio product was over where the TVs are, and I said, you need to put this over where your networking products are, not where the TVs are. I can understand why, but you need to let people know about it over in the networking products. So next time I showed up, that's where it was.
How can I call you, Peter, for a little paid consulting advice on the landline? to call?
You can look me up on my website.
Yeah.
Infostar.com.
Infostar.com. There you go. Thanks for calling, Bob. Good luck. Appreciate it very much. And Stuart and Marinette, it's your turn. Hi, Stuart.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
You were talking about, you know, deciding whether to use Macs or Windows systems. And about 4 years ago, I made the decision when Windows 7 came out not to upgrade to Windows 7 and then instead to convert over to Macs. And I tell you, I've been incredibly happy having done that. I'm an incredibly computer savvy person. I've used both systems my whole life, and I had moved away from Macintosh after college. And then now I have like one, two, three. I probably have five different Macintosh computers at home for the whole family. And they're intuitive. You know, the startup times are much faster. It doesn't do all the, it's not as intrusive in its updating. it doesn't make you wait like Windows still does. And so, yeah, we've been really, really happy. And, yeah, there was some learning curves to overcome as far as some of the software, you know, using Pages instead of Microsoft Word and stuff like that. But we've been incredibly happy with the conversion.
Well,
I think that's why it's probably grown in popularity.
Yeah, I can.
You know, there are a lot of successes out there. Again, it's not a we don't have a perfect world, and
yeah.
You know, I've used all their different devices, and occasionally there are glitches. So don't, you know, I'm just saying that, you know, yours was a great experience, but there are going to be those little hiccups and headaches, and you can go out there and find a problem with anything that you want. You know, if you love Fords, you know, you'll find people that don't like Fords. If you love Chevys, you'll find people that don't like you know, the list. So the same thing with Mac and PCs and versions of Windows. There was even a popular editor for Windows products, and he said, you know, got to a point where he said, this version of Windows is not for me. I'm done. I'm not writing about it. I'm not talking about it. I don't even want to acknowledge it even exists. It's like, but he's still in the Windows world. He's still writing about Windows, but he just said, it's not for me, and I'm not going there. So,
well, my experience was the same as yours, Stuart. So I appreciate your call, and thank you for calling, and invite others to call in at 800-642-1234. Larry Mueller here with Peter Green of InfoStar.com, our guest on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Peter Green of InfoStar.com, our guest today, Larry Mueller here. Thank you for listening in. Laura in Manitowoc has a question, and let's go to her. Hi, Laura.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Okay, I am a PC user, and I use it for all the, you know, typical things online, offline, but I have Adobe Creative Suite. And the last time I purchased it as a student, and it was CS4. I don't know if they have replaced that. I don't know how many times they've replaced that since. But I'm in the market for a new computer, and I'm wondering if I do go to an Apple computer, what will that mean for my software? Will I have to purchase whole new software? I mean, I know when you go from one platform to another that sometimes you can just buy a supplement, but in this case, I don't know if I'd have to buy it all new because it was a student version. Or do you know about that?
Well, I can tell you that there is a newer version of Creative Suite out now. You know, it went to 5, and I don't know if they're at 6 or 5.5, but there is a newer version of it out. It is a program that is written for both platforms, so there's a Windows version and a Mac version. The data is compatible between the two, so I have it on both systems, both platforms, and I've used it between each other. As far as the upgrading policy that might be available for you, you might have to check online. You might want to do some searches on that, where you might be able to purchase an upgrade to your license, and it might be at a reduced rate.
Well, see, I have done that research, and that's why I'm asking, because what I'm wondering is, I have the software for the PC.
Right.
You need a separate version for that, so I have the PC version. But if I go to
the Mac,
a new Mac,
right.
Will I be able to buy an upgrade? You know what I mean?
For the Mac.
I still need the PC version.
Yeah. Yeah. You might want to, you could probably just actually call Adobe support, you know, their sales, and find out. Or you could take, you know, see if you can find an email address to them and email them the question.
Yeah, this one we don't have off the top of our head.
Well, they're the ones that are going to know the ultimate answer. Sometimes.
Yeah, I was just hoping to avoid that phone call.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, you know, to me, you own the license to the Creative Suite product line. You know, it's several products, and you know they call it, you know, whichever level it is, but it's a version that's sold for Windows and it's a version sold for Mac. So if you're upgrading to a different operating system, the price of the software is the same on either platform.
Mm-hmm.
So,
but now I'm asking to change three things. I'm no longer a student. I'm
right.
going from PC to Apple.
Mm-hmm.
And I assume that, well, maybe I could buy the older version, but I probably want to upgrade to the newest version. Okay, so that sounds like a question for them.
Yeah,
yeah, they're the ones that are going to be able to, and they'll probably be thrilled that you're wanting to stick with them. So maybe, you know, you could say, aren't you happy that I want to stick with you?
Well, that's what I figured. I was going to try that if all else fails.
You know, I know I see these on these news broadcasts where they tell you, you know, they've done this research and they say, well, just ask the company for a discount because they should just be happy to keep you as a user.
There you go, Laura.
I'll give it a try. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks. Good luck. Thanks for calling. Kathy in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have an iPad, and I'm not all that well-versed in iPads, but this weekend I was trying to log into something with the eTools. And I'm fine on my PC doing it, but when I was on my iPad, it said that I need Flash 9.5, I believe. So when I went to download it, it said it wasn't compatible with my device.
Mm.
So is that something that iPad and that's Adobe?
Yeah, that's part of Steve Jobs' legacy that he left behind.
Yeah, it is so miserable.
He had a battle with Adobe and called them lazy and refused to conform to one of their product line, which is the Flash. So,
okay.
You try to do something that frustrates other people as well, so you're not alone. And all I could say is, if you want to take the time and tell Apple how you feel about it, maybe they've heard it enough times, they might do something. Or, you know. I don't know if it's worth pursuing. I think I did it one time to see if there were some alternative Flash translators out there that you could, you know, install on the iPad. But, you know, I never really pursued it. But I'm sure there's probably somebody out there that's worked on trying to trick it. And whether or not it's worth pursuing is, you know, up to you whether or not you even want to do it. But you're frustrated like other people are.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Yeah, that's the real, for me, that's the real downside.
Like I said, that's one of things Steve Jobs left behind. You know, we'll see if Apple, you know, moves forward and at some point in time either, you know, if they fix it or if they choose to, he might have had it in his will. I don't know.
Nancy in Brighton, hello.
Hi, Larry. Hi, Peter.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call. I am like the Lucy of technology, and, you know, it's like everything I touch, something happens, and it doesn't work anymore. So I am calling because of the gentleman who called earlier regarding the Wi-Fi, and we have Wi-Fi in our house right now that is connected with our telephone company, which happens to be TDS, and it runs well. We love it. Our Wi-Fi works. But I've been being charged a certain amount of money per month to have the router, and we are thinking about getting rid of our landline just to cut some of our costs down with having four teenagers in the house and so forth. So if I get rid of my phone access, obviously then I can't use Wi-Fi, or do you just recommend keeping like the super minimum phone service alive so I can buy the Vizio and then at least get rid of the $5 a month or whatever it is charge that the phone company is charging me for the Wi-Fi?
Here are some things to weigh. For using TDS's internet access, they are giving you probably DSL service,
correct,
which requires a landline.
Correct.
If you remove the landline, you can't have DSL service. But if you're saying you want to cut off the phone service but still have the DSL line, they will charge you like some kind of access fee to at least have that line in. So that's okay. One possibility.
Yeah, okay. that's what we have.
That's the other possibility is to look at something like Cable or Charter and seeing mm-hmm. what their cable internet service is and what speed it's at and weigh mm-hmm. that cost versus the DSL service that you would be paying at least the line for plus the internet cost.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know what your cable bill's like, but, I mean, we have satellite out here, and it's okay. insane.
Yeah, I would agree with that. So, you know, that...
So it might be worth keeping the landline.
That's what we did.
Yeah. So
We don't have the phone, but yeah. We've got the line.
Landline. Okay. So I don't have to have the... Well, I still have to have a number, but it's just not a number that's in use for phone calls kind of thing.
Well, it's a landline that they're going to use to give you access to the internet, but you're not going to be using it for phone service at all.
So there's no way I can just go to Best Buy, get the Vizio, plug it in, and it's going to work. I got to have that.
You got to have the internet. You got to bring it in one way or the other.
There you go.
Whether it's satellite or cable or... the DSL line.
Peter Green, our guest. We'll take a quick look at the news and be back with Pete. Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here with Peter Green of Infostar.com, our personal computer consultant. Great to have him along. Thank you for listening in. And Pete, this time of the show, we like to take a look at what you've discovered for great websites. And I know you got another top 10 list for us.
Yep. If you go to Infostar.com, go to the top 10 archives and scroll down to today's date, or go to the current top 10 and they're all there. This first one is a searchable resource for gardening to help answer any of your questions, and it's called gardeningknowhow.com. The next one is shared by a hockey buddy of mine, and I was remarking to Larry that it would be amazing if this was available for other major league sports, but it's only available for ice hockey. But it's called CapGeek, GEEK.com. And what's amazing is all the statistics that are up there is related to salaries and salary caps, and all the glory detail is up there, and it's just really eye-opening. This number three is Get Your Business Online, and it's managed by Google, and it's a free resource to help put your company online with a website, and it's called gybo.com. Number four is an official website representing the Writers Guild, and it's called authorsguild.org, and apparently it was founded in 1912 by the Authors League of America. Number five is a free service online for broadcast signal of 50,000, they claim 50,000 plus stations over the internet, and it's called tunein.com. If you like biking, this one's for people that are interested in some history. So it's about the Pedaling History Bicycle Museum, and it's called pedalinghistory.com, and it's got a lot of very interesting facts. Number seven is a company that offers free internet security products, including antivirus and firewall solutions. And there's a whole list out there on another link that I put that you'll find at this one. And it's called Komodo, Comodo.com. So it's another solution to look at.
Yep.
Number eight, you've mentioned to me earlier that you had a show that talked a little bit about this. It's called Pinterest, and it's basically a virtual pin board. And a lot of people seem to find it popular to share pictures and things about their lives and what they're doing. Number nine is a Wisconsin citizen-based environmental advocacy organization looking at trying to protect our natural resources, and it's called WisconsinEnvironment.org. And the 10th one is MakingHomeAffordable.gov, and you may have seen it advertised or not, but it's how to lower your mortgage commitment or mortgage mm-hmm. payment if you qualify. But all the details are available at that website.
So there you go, and all those at infostar.com if you didn't get them done. All right. Pete, we've got Vivian in Milwaukee who has a question for you. Hi, Viv.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
And I have a friend out of state who has a Vizio reader, and both of us are Mac people. And I'm wondering if there's any place, I'm in Milwaukee, where I could see what this reader is like and then see how it would be able to do transfer PDFs and items from my Mac. I have a mini Mac Lion to transfer things from.
When you say Vizio reader, I'm not quite...
It's like a book reader. It's made by Vizio. I mean, it's like there's Nook and there's all these other sorts of...
So that you have like books that...
They're for reading books instead of taking a Kindle or one of the others.
So you want to move those files to a Mac?
Well, I don't have anything from Kindle or Nook, whatever. Okay. I don't have any yet. I have quite a few PDF documents that are kind of long, and I'd like to transfer them. But I'm wondering, is it possible, I've never seen this item. Is there some place, some store where it's sold in Milwaukee, do you know, and I could go in and talk to somebody in there? Or
The only thing I could think of is to search online and see, you know, where it's sold, you know.
Okay.
And see if there's anything that comes up locally, or just inquire with the company and see if they have a local outlet.
Do you have any experience with it? You were talking about Vizio television.
Yeah, I didn't realize they made a reader as well. Just with their display devices and the one wireless router that they happen to make that works with their TVs. What I would probably do is look and see if in the App Store on the Mac, if there are any Vizio Reader products out there. Because basically what you're doing is you're creating what these alternative devices do is and apps is create like a library that you pull the product into. So you need to be able to be compatible with how the Vizio product is set up. Even though it might be a PDF, maybe they did something to it to make it readable or usable on the Vizio versus any other platform. So it's like translating it. You need a translator.
Yeah.
So that might be a thing to look for, Vizio translator, Vizio reader translator.
Okay.
Something like that.
And then stores in Milwaukee.
Yeah.
Something.
Well, I thank you very much.
Yep. Thanks a lot for calling.
I know Vizio's website's pretty feature-rich, and they might even allow you to search and see where the Vizio product is sold locally. I wouldn't be surprised.
Yep. There you go. Thank you, Viv. And John in Dodgeville. Hi.
Yes. How are you doing today?
Hi. Great. Thank you for calling.
Well, I'll tell you what. I got two problems, kind of. I got two Macs that are 2006 models. It's got dual processor 2.0. One of them just started giving me three beeps when it boots up. Beep, 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 and it'll pause, beep, 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 and just keeps doing that. I checked the memory. That's what it said to do online. I switched both memories. Nothing's working on that. And then the other one that boots up, both these just happened within the last 2 weeks.
Wow.
The other one boots up, plays music, and shuts down. And it does it without the hard drive or with the hard drive. I did that much to it just to see. And that's where I'm sitting. Just thought that you might have some ideas.
Sometimes there are. It's almost like a reset that you have to do to the system. And I don't know what they are on the Mac models that you have, but you might want to research and see if there's a way to do a reset. I know I had a problem with like an HP laptop once, and there was a certain sequence of keyboard commands that I had to do. And I know I've had this with, like, on my iPhone, where you have to hold certain things down for a certain period of time, and it basically resets it, almost like wiping the error message out so you can get past it.
What I did is I took the battery out, unplugged it, and I held the on button down, because I know that's how you do a lot of different laptops that have problems, just to clear all the electric out of it and stuff like that. And then I plugged it all back in. And one of the memory slots, if you just take one memory out and put one in the other slot, it doesn't beep. It boots up, but there's no video. It's really weird. I almost think that the memory slots are messed up in it somehow. I don't know if they've had a problem with the solder on those or not.
Yeah, I don't know, but
it's about a 3-year-old laptop, so.
Yeah, unless you've really fiddled around with that a lot, more than likely, you know, it's probably okay, and there might be just problems with the memory that you're using. But the only way to do that is to take that memory and put it in another machine and see if...
Yeah, I tried that. See it works,
So the memory works in another machine?
Yeah, uh-huh, yeah.
Well, that's not good.
It's almost like, it's like it's not reading the memory. It's like it's saying... Because if you take the memory out, it still gives you the three beeps.
Not good.
Doesn't sound good.
No, it sure doesn't.
Sounds like you tried everything... I would have tried.
Yeah.
Well, I just thought I'd say hello anyway.
All right.
Good luck.
Thanks, John. Thank you for calling. Oh, that's too bad. Kirsty in Madison. Hi.
Hi.
Hello.
I was just calling with a follow-up to the Adobe conversation that was happening earlier.
Yeah.
I just purchased Adobe Creative Suite 5.5 for my small nonprofit where I work. And while I was doing the research for that, it was quite clear on all of the documentation online that you had to choose either the Macintosh or the PC installation. And if you purchased one, you would have to purchase the other if you switched operating systems. They would not grant you the license to go on both operating systems.
Oh, that's not very nice.
No.
I know. Kind of a drag. And so I just wanted to call and follow up, and then I thought I would share a little advice. I did quite a bit of research on this because we are a nonprofit and don't have a lot of cash, and ended up discovering that the most cost-efficient way, because apparently Adobe and Apple have not been getting along very well. So HP has started building PCs specifically to run the Adobe Creative Suite. So for less than $1,000, you can get a very high-powered laptop, you know, 17-inch high-resolution screen machine to run the Adobe systems with all of the qualifications and benchmarks necessary.
Oh, wow. Nice.
So that was the cheapest option I found. In order to get the same in a Macintosh, it would have been closer to $2,000 or $3,000.
Right.
Wow. Well, thanks for that tip.
Yeah.
So I just thought I'd share what little I knew from what I did.
Thanks, Kirsty.
Yeah, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Yeah, bye-bye. Well, that's a very good tip. Judy in Mineral Point, on to you now. Hi, Judy.
Well, hi. Hi to both of you.
Hi.
Hi.
I have an iMac that I bought about a year ago, desktop iMac, having been on a PC platform before that for, my gosh, back into the 80s. And but that doesn't mean that I know a lot about computers. It's just that I knew something about a PC. Anyway, I'm calling because I'm having some trouble with the iPhoto program. I bought a new camera shortly after the time that I bought the iMac, and it's a Panasonic. And the first little problem that we ran into was that we found that we could not download images from the Panasonic Lumix directly into my iMac. We had to buy an intermediate reader that I can put the card into, and then that goes into the iMac. So we thought we had things solved. And what happened next was that I went on this glorious vacation to Italy last spring.
Mm.
And I came back with a card that has about 1,000 images on it. And so I thought, great, you know, I'm going to learn about iPhoto. I went over to the Mac store in Madison, and I, you know, went to a couple of little one-on-one sessions so that I felt like I could use iPhoto. And so I downloaded these images, and they went into iPictures. And I am really confused about the difference between iPictures and iPhoto. It was my impression that there's an automatic, when you download images, it automatically sends them into iPhoto. And so I discovered that I had, you know, this enormously large number of images apparently just somewhere in my hard drive. And they have the numbers on them that are in the camera, which, of course, mean nothing. So I thought, well, it's because I didn't have iPhoto selected, you know, as the application in use when I did the download. So I downloaded them again into the iPhoto, and still they're not there. I seem to have images scattered in between, and then I started moving. I, you know, did the two windows thing, and I had both. I used Finder so that I had the lists of the images on both window pages, and I moved them. I tried to move them manually, a chunk at a time, into iPhoto, and I thought, well, iPhoto will take over now, and it will be very smart, and it will categorize them according to the dates. But it didn't. They're all messed up. And I wonder if you have any advice. I mean, obviously, I know I must sound a little confused.
Yeah.
I would have you said you went to Apple, took a class, or?
I did, yeah. Yeah. You know, you get for the 1 year one-on-one for after you buy a new Mac. And so I did try to learn how to use iPhoto, and I think I kind of do,
right.
But my problem is that the images are not, apparently they're not in iPhoto,
mm-hmm.
at least maybe not all of them, and the dates on them are not accurate,
mm-hmm.
and so this backs up into a camera problem, because I don't want to delete those images from that card.
Right.
You know, I don't want to take a chance on losing them. And mm-hmm. I mean, do you think it would be smart to go in and just delete all these images that are in iPicture?
Well, one thing that I would do is I would make a backup copy of that, of those pictures. So, you know, if you have the ability to burn a DVD, you know, is to burn those pictures onto another, another media. So at least you have backup.
Makes really good sense.
Because, you know, one of the questions that always comes up when you're importing from one device to another is, do you want to delete them after it's done? And, you know, if you goof and hit the delete or say yes, then they will do that. It sounds to me, you know, when you're working with a large number of pictures and or files, for that matter, in any case, and you're doing an import or an export, and there's labeling involved or organization, there's usually a pretty exact way things need to be done. And I'm not saying that you're making a mistake, but sometimes it's a matter of understanding the behavior of the software to follow through and get it exactly how it's looking for. And you may not get it right the first time, because there might be one step that you're not quite doing right. Or you're not doing it all, but you think you are. Mm. So, you know, rather than having all those images in your system and then trying to do it again, you're correct in that you really should clean it up so you could get it right when you try it. But do it in small batches. Don't try to do 1,000 images at one time.
You mean when I'm onto the DVD? When I'm saving, backing them up?
No, when you're trying to do, you know, bring them back onto your system and have them organized, is to try and do a little test sample so that you can see how your system is actually functioning on a small scale, so that when you try to do it on a larger scale, that you're okay with how it's going to do it.
Right. Yeah, well, you know, that was kind of the concept I used when I transferred the images from iPicture.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, to begin with.
The other thing I would recommend doing to just confirm that you're doing it right, or that maybe you aren't missing anything, and like I said, you are right, is to look for some video tutorials that people have done with using, you know, iPhoto and so forth, is go on YouTube and just do some searches on that. You'd be mm-hmm. surprised at what people have posted for that.
Yeah. Good luck. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call, Judy. Or just go back to the store, too.
Yeah, you could actually have them help you. They'd probably you through it.
They'd probably do it and wouldn't charge you. This is an email from Julie, who had several old computers no longer serviceable. Husband's reluctant to recycle them because he says there's no way to really remove all the information so that it can't be recovered, short of physically destroying them or passing a very strong magnet over them. Mm-hmm. This sounds crazy to me. How can we remove financial information so these can be recycled?
Well, you can take the hard drives out, and you can destroy them.
Yeah.
You can run strong magnets over them, and that will destroy them, too, because that's what they do.
Yeah.
And that's what I've done in the past. You know, if you physically take those drives out, open them up, expose them, crush the platens, hammer them, whatever you want to do, they're not going to work for anybody.
What if you, so, and if you want to donate, though, what do you do?
If you want to donate, typically you can reformat them, F-disk them, reinstall the OS, and then do it again. They'll be fine. They can be reused.
Okay,
so it's more work, but that'll clean them. No one's going to go back, and that's a lot of forensics work to try and get stuff that should technically be password protected anyhow.
Yeah, so there's a
yeah
very small chance of anything. Well, I mean, there are ways that you can just completely eliminate it and still be able to pass it on.
Yeah, if you want to make the system reusable, you can delete everything off of it, reformat the hard drive, F-disk it, put on two partitions, and reinstall the OS again, and you're not going to be able to recover stuff off of that.
People aren't going to be able to get at
no,
it.
But no. That's a lot of work that people typically don't want to do, because
yeah.
if you're talking about a Windows install, depending upon the hardware, that could take one or two, you're talking about maybe a half a day of monkeying around with that. And some people just don't want to do that because they look at it and go, it's worthless to me. Why do I want to put in 4 hours of my time? So they just take out the hard drive and crush it.
Yeah, and if you got five or six of those old
it's
machines.
It's a lot easier to take it out and mechanically disable it than it is to put in the time to redo it. So that's a choice you make.
Pete, always a pleasure. Thanks so much.
Yep. Great, Larry.
And you'll be back, I know. June 4th.
Yep.
You'll be back on June 4th, and we will do this all over again. Peter Green of Infostar.com, our guest, great to have him along. And he'll be back on June 4th. That's Monday as well. Just looking ahead to tomorrow, Dr. Sandy Sawchuk stops by to talk about your pet's health. In the meantime, thank you for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.